All right, so I have a one-slide presentation, and my entire presentation is going to be a social media tutorial, everything you need to know, okay? Are you ready? Write this down. It's actually a T-shirt. This is how to be a social media consultant, all right? This is the advice that people give you. This is all they tell you, right? Now, there's a problem with this advice, okay? And that's what our session is focusing on today. And the problem is that it's totally wrong. Actually, it's much better to be a dick. And it's much better to focus on yourself because you know what? You make more money that way. And so what I want to tell you about is a couple of examples of how that happens. Now, this is what they tell you in business school, right? How many people went to business school? Okay. How many people went to a school? Okay. Still about half the hands, so it's a little bit odd, but I guess people don't want to admit that they spent some time in second grade. It's kind of embarrassing. That's what we hear, right? Now, here's the problem, that people aren't generally good judges of what they actually need. And people ask for a lot of stupid shit, right? Customers ask for a lot of stupid crap. Who has ever tried to return a product that they broke themselves? Okay. You're assholes, all of you. Customer's not king, right? People do this kind of crap all the time. We do this kind of crap all the time. Now, here's what Facebook buttons actually should be, right? These are what real Facebook buttons should look like, right? All we have is like and dislike and unlike, but actually what we should have is these, right? These are what we really feel. If we were emotionally connected to what we did, this is what we would have. So I'm going to give you a couple of strategies for how to be unlikable. That's what I promised you. That's what I'm going to deliver. Strategy number one, do not pander to stupid, slow, or poor people. That's just a waste of your time, okay? Now, we talk about all these things that we should do, the virtuous things, but why are we doing that, right? We're just wasting our own time. Here is the guy who you should emulate. You know what? If you can't afford a $700 product, then fuck you. I mean, sure you can. Yeah. I think it actually was already tweeted by the Apple official account. They probably use different language, but whatever. You know, make it for somebody, right? Now, here is my favorite website. This is from Herman Miller. Now, Herman Miller is all about design. What you have to do is take your mouse and slide over one of these little bars to make it pop out, because that's really awesome design. And if you miss, then you're slow, right? If you can't get your cursor to go over one of these and keep it in place, then you have a medical condition. Too bad, right? Because we have a design site. It's perfect. It's perfect for our target audience. It excludes everyone else. Love it. Love it. Now, this is a great thing to do too, right? We pander to the lowest possible browsers and all of the people who have really shitty computers. You know what? They should upgrade their computers. Why are we doing all this crap, right? Why are we trying to make it for everybody? You know what? Just leave those people out. Who cares? We don't need them, right? We got our target audience already. Strategy number two, be useful, but in the way that's easiest for you, right? You don't have to be actually useful. You just have to be useful in a strategic way that's useful for you, right? Here's Google Suggest, right? I actually think that sometimes, but Google put it into words for me, so sometimes that's cool, right? Here's a great example, right, of Carnival Cruise Lines. They go off and I tweet about my upcoming vacation and they say, woohoo, have a great time. Easy for them, right? They don't have to give a discount. They don't have to tell me I can cut in line or do something like that. They'll just say, woohoo, have a great time, because we're your buddies. That's what people want. They want brands to be buddies for them, or at least pretend like you are, you know? Use an exclamation point. Exclamation points are human. In fact, use two of them. One, two, right? And create a spreadsheet in your social media tracking database for how many exclamation points you use per tweet. and then divide it by the gross number of times that you get retweeted for each tweet that has an exclamation point. And then you can create a tweet to exclamation point ratio, and that'll be your perfect metric to be able to demonstrate the humanity of what you're doing, right? It works. We use that right now. You know, tell people things that they already know, because the thing is... if you do that, nobody can argue with you, right? You're right. I mean, this bird is fucking everywhere, right? So why not tell people that? Why not just do it? Same thing, right? Give people the information they already have, because you know what? Then you can have the number one best thing possible happen with social media, which is that you can take credit for shit other people have done. How cool is that, right? Somebody else painted this thing. Now it's dry. You have the credit for telling people it's dry. It's great, right? Try and use that every time you can. Strategy number three, only share the most convenient facts that you can find, right? Facts are facts. We have a lot of stuff there, right? We can make up any statistic we want. 49% of people think one thing, 51% of people think the other thing, right? Why not make them up? Who knows the difference, right? 75% of people said that they would show up this morning because I promised them that they would get free shit, right? No free shit. Who knows the difference, right? How many people showed up because you were going to get free stuff today? How many people? See? Okay, 3, 4, 5, see? Who cares? What's the statistic? Nobody matters, right? Nothing like that matters. Here is a brilliant, brilliant ad, okay? What Camel Cigarettes did is they went out and they found a bunch of doctors who couldn't stop smoking. And they said, these doctors are smoking, therefore, it must be okay for you. Because doctors are doing it, right? If you see people who are in a position of influence doing it, that's a fact, right? You go outside of a hospital, the fact is people are smoking. Therefore, must be fine. Use the facts that are useful. Here's a great ad. It says, in a blind taste test, hungry people chose a hot breakfast over cold cereal 90% of the time. Here's a warm, beautiful breakfast of a hot something or other. And here's a cold cereal. Who would like the warm breakfast? Because it's freezing outside. 90% of people. Now we got our thing. But, oh, by the way, it's not based on a fact. But as long as you make that super small at the bottom here, that's okay. See, there's a word for that. It's called disclaimer, right? Now, the way I use a disclaimer in my normal life is I say no offense, right? You can say no offense before anything you say. And it basically is a get-out-of-jail-free card for anything else that you want to say. So no offense, but you're the stupidest person I ever met. No offense, right? It works. Try it. Later on today, try it. In fact, try it during a question today and see. You'll be able to get out of jail free. It'll be great, right? Here is my favorite brand ever, right? Jeff Smyzik, great-looking guy, from United Airlines, new CEO. And when he comes on, how many people took a United Airlines flight to get here? Okay, how many people took a flight to get here? How many people walked? How many people took, like, a freaking bicycle rickshaw or something? Okay, all right, a couple people. All right, so he comes on air, and he says, welcome to United. We are going to deliver a crappy... No, he says, welcome to United. We're improving the quality of our onboard product, right? What's an onboard product? I guess it's like the seat or the food or whatever, but it doesn't matter, right? Because they're improving the quality. Now, that is a fact, right? Because where they are today is less sucky than where they will be 5 years from now. So they're improving, right? Technically. It doesn't matter that you don't have running water on your flight. It doesn't matter if you have any sort of issues on the flight, because the fact is they're improving. Focus on the facts, the ones that are most convenient, right? Evian is naive, spelled backwards. Not sure how that helps, but I thought that'd be interesting for people. Little fact for you. And donut seeds actually work. We have a donut tree in our backyard. It's great. And I can produce lots of packages of these donut seeds. It's awesome. So strategy number four, always collect the data you need and then find a way to use it, okay? We're all about data. How many people have a role that focuses on data in some way? Okay, all right, so data's great. Data tells you a lot of cool stuff. So here is a brilliant effort by BlackBerry, right? They want to capture success stories from people. But I don't just want to hear that you successfully tweeted about something using your BlackBerry. Why would I care about that, right? I need to know your first name, your last name, your email address, your phone number, your job title, your company name, address one, address two, in case you have two addresses, city, country, state, province, zip postal code, and, by the way, how many BlackBerry smartphones have been deployed throughout your company? So before you share a testimonial, we want you to go off and send an entire inter-office email to your whole company, capture all the responses from people who use BlackBerries, tally those up, put them into there so that you can share all the data with us, because that way we have a complete database. Yes? Yes, the hashtag is screw you. Okay. Next, hotness. Wait, what is the hashtag, by the way? Okay, what is it? Are you likable? Are you likable? And if you can't do that, then the other hashtag is can you spell? Because it's sort of tough to do that, okay? All right, so here's a great ad from Levi's. Love this. All of their data probably shows that these are three entirely different sized women. So, based on the data, they've launched an entire campaign on how hotness comes in all shapes and sizes, as long as you're fucking skinny. Which is cool, right? Because who wants to sell jeans to people who aren't skinny? So, strategically, it works for them, right? If people get offended, this is a great e-card to send them, right? Because, honestly, if people take offense to stuff, it's probably their fault, not your fault. So the fact is, just, you know, let them deal with their own issues. You don't have to take everybody else's issue on. Last tip I have for you, this is very important, is tempt customers, right? Promise them stuff at some point in the future, because you know what? You're not going to have everything right now, but tempting people is the way to keep them engaged. Brilliant, brilliant way for Lufthansa, right? They talk about how you can have internet on a long 8-hour flight. Oh, 8-hour flight. I could have internet. I could do all kinds of things except surf porn, right? I could do everything I want. But don't tell them which flights it's on. How perfect is that? That way they show up. They book the plane. Maybe I'll have internet, right? You don't actually have to have it on more than just one flight because you have internet, technically, right? You have this thing. And in case it's not believable, little tip for you. Put the registered trademark right after anything you want to put, right? Because then it's official. Somebody certified it, which is good. People want official. People want real, credible stuff, right? Google does that too, you know, limited beta, right? If you're launching any sort of product, great beta release tip for you. Just launch it in beta. Send one email to one person. They're your beta tester. And then put up a page like this saying, hey, we're in beta. Sorry, can't let you in yet, but it's coming. Something's coming, right? You don't need anything for that. You can just launch that page. You can just do that. So that's basically what I've got. By the way, buy my book, right? It's coming out. Buy my book. That is everything that I have for you. What I'd like to know, though, is are there any questions about any of this?
You're totally full of shit.
No. Well, no. I mean, I'm telling people shit that they need to hear. Don't you think?
Dude, you're going to wreck the whole fucking way we do business here. In the last year, you know how much progress we've made? And you're going to single-handedly ruin it all, dude.
I don't think people agree with you. I think that they agree with me.
You guys
They're
agree with me?
To say it.
let's get serious for a moment. First of all, give it up for Rohit Bhargava. Unbelievable start, my friend. And my name is Dave Kirpin. I'm co-hosting with Rohit. I'm at Dave Kirpin, and Rohit is at Rohit Bhargava, R-O-H-I-T, Bhargava. I thought we'd actually let you guys know that, as well as actually letting you guys know that the hashtag is Are You Likeable, the letter R, U, Likeable.
You can use screw you also if you want to, though.
I mean, you can use screw you. So Rohit started as promised by delivering you some awfully unlikable strategies. What we thought we would do now is share some stories about businesses that actually are likable and how that can make a real difference in ROI. So I'm going to start with a story that I tell at the beginning of my book, and it's the same story that I tell to senior executives that don't believe in the power of social media, and specifically don't believe in the power and value of Twitter. Now, I know it's a South By crowd, and everyone here is totally into Twitter. But how many of you guys know at least one senior executive that doesn't fully understand the value of Twitter and listening and social media? Yeah, okay.
One?
At least one. Exactly. How many of you know at least one senior executive that's here at South By that doesn't really fully understand? Yeah. So this is the story I tell them. It was about a year and a half ago, and I was going to Vegas. I was staying at the Aria, the hottest club and hotel on the Strip at the time. I had taken a six-hour flight from New York. I was totally exhausted. I was totally frustrated and tired. And I was waiting online to check in to the Aria Hotel for over 45 minutes. Pretty unlikable experience. So, of course, I did what any social media nerd would do. I tweeted, waiting online at the Aria for over 45 minutes. Not worth it. Pound fail. And unfortunately, the Aria wasn't listening. And they didn't respond. But the Rio was listening to my tweet down the street. And when I tell this story, senior executives get super excited, right? This is the moment of truth. This is the ROI. And they say to me, Dave, what did the Rio say? Come on over. We'll take great care of you. Dave, we've got a room with your name on it. They actually didn't, right? Had they said that, I would have thought two things. First, sort of creepy that they're stalking me this closely. And second, why is it wide open at the Rio when it's jam-packed and happening at the Aria? What they tweeted to me was the following. Sorry you're having a bad experience, Dave. Hope the rest of your time in Vegas goes well. Sorry you're having a bad experience, Dave. Hope the rest of your time in Vegas goes well. Well, guess where I stayed the next time I went to Vegas? So the Rio earned a $600 sale from one tweet in which they weren't selling me. All they were doing was listening and empathizing.
Yeah, but Dave, I don't think that there's that many people in the audience that agree with you. So I dare you to get like even one person to come up and share a story like that.
I don't know. Does anyone else have a story out there?
I dare them to just come up.
Come on up. Come on up. Anyone have a story out there to share? Come on up, guys. We got one. We might even have two. We might even have a couple.
All right. One, two, three.
That's not bad.
Four, five. Okay. All right.
You know, there are just a couple of folks out there that do believe that it pays to be likable.
All right.
What? This is my
tweet about being in an unlikable line.
Yeah, there you go. Sorry about that. Well, this is my Oprah moment, right? Because we don't have enough microphones out there. What's your name and what's your story?
I'm Shashi Belamkonda. I'm the social media swami of Network Solutions, which is a web.com company now.
Okay, fantastic. And where can we find you? And give us a very big plug there. No, just kidding. what's your story?
You know, I started social media for Network Solutions in 2008, and the first South by Southwest event I came to, the first person I met, I said, I work for Network Solutions. He said, dude, I'm sorry for you. So that was the kind of reputation we had just simply because we were not listening in social media. And when we started a Twitter ID, just like you had, people were very surprised even to just get a response from a company on Twitter in 2008.
So you actually, not likable once again. So you actually started listening?
Started listening. So.
And did it actually work?
So the benchmark that we did for just social media mentions was 63% negative, whereas the customer service traditional channels were giving us more than 85% satisfaction rate. But social channels were giving us 65% negative rating. 6 months after we started just listening and responding to customers, the negativity came down to 23%. I mean, granted, we are a service company, so people don't go home and switch on the light and say, wow, my power company rocks. So we are in the same boat. Things can go wrong. Then we try to help people on Twitter.
Cool. So things can and will go wrong, but by responding to folks, you actually were able to turn around the negativity.
Yeah. One thing we realized, even though we are back to having a logo in our Twitter ID, was the first time when we started responding, people would say, this is a bot. It can be a real human being. And then somebody else would tweet back and say, I checked this dude out. His nose hair is showing in his Twitter profile.
Nice. All right. Well, thanks so much, Shashi. All right. Awesome.
How are you, John Nosta? Johnnosta. You can hold the mic or am I?
Yeah, I get to hold it. Sorry. It's the Oprah thing.
So anyway, this is a story for Rohit. I went to get breakfast this morning at a diner, and there's a sign on the window. It said, open 24 hours. Perfect communication. So I knock on the door. The guy said, sorry, we're closed. I said, open 24 hours. He said, not in a row. So, so my story about customer delight and the opposite of that is I work in healthcare. I'm coming in from the airport, and it was raining, as usual. So I tweeted, should I bring an umbrella to the convention? Real simple. I want to know if I should lug this thing around. And in 1 minute, I got a tweet back from a mobile retailer who says, we will sell you an umbrella right at the convention. Don't worry about it. And boy, that bonded. That was a really, really powerful customer experience. It might have been a bot, but I was on board. Now let's just flip it around the other way. I work in healthcare, and we were talking about this a lot the other day. If I tweet that I have a cold or I have chest pains or worse than that, I have cancer, if someone tweets back to me, yo, cancer, cool, come on over, we'll give you our drug, that's the antithesis of that experience. So it kind of works both ways. But the immediacy of the umbrella thing was real cool. So
cool. But of course, there is a way, you know, God forbid, you know, if you tweeted you had cancer and somebody tweeted, you know, we're so sorry, there's a huge support group here for you, and this is it, that could be a likable experience that could draw you in.
And pharma is inclined to kind of look at ways of doing that. If they come back and say, hey, you know, use our chemotherapy, it's not the way to do it. But to embrace people with empathy as opposed to sell was kind of a cool thing. So
awesome. Awesome. Thanks so much for sharing, John.
So I'm Bob Blount at R. Blount, and I travel a lot. I'm in the digital space and spend a lot of time on planes and in hotels like this. So I've got two recent hotel experiences. One is Hilton in Portland, Oregon. I was attending an Intel conference. And we were in a room like this, a group about this size, and it was freezing cold. I stay at Hilton's, I stay at different hotels, I actually usually stay at Westin's. So I thought, what the heck, I'm going to go ahead and tweet about it. And I didn't have a local address, so I didn't know what their profile, I just used a hashtag Hilton. Within a minute, I got a response from somebody at Hilton Corporate, a little bit scary of the stalking element, because they knew I was in Portland. And they had already contacted the banquet manager, and they were addressing the heat problem. And if I felt like it, please, you know, voice and share with the crowd. So that was kind of cool. The other one actually was happening here in Austin. I'm local, so I don't typically stay at the hotels here in Austin, but I was at the W. And how many are having problems with Wi-Fi at hotels? You know, had a few, see a few hands there. It failed, right? So I just simply used W Hotel Austin Wi-Fi fail. Within a minute, I got a response. Hey, Robert, if you would mind tell us where you are in the hotel, we'll fix the problem immediately. I've actually since had multiple dialogues now with the Westin, or the W here in Austin, and other people and friends of mine that are staying there, and they're like pulling me into conversation and stuff, and I've given them a couple of shout-outs because they fixed a problem. I'm not staying there. They got, you know, a little food and beverage revenue from me, but I'm not a local guy to stay there. So,
very cool. Thanks so much for sharing. Jenna.
So my name is Jenna LaBelle. I'm actually from Maine originally, so I'm not going to name a city because you probably don't know any anyways. But mine's kind of a big scale story that sort of indirectly touches me. Honda, this past fall, identified a fan in their community named Joe from Maine who was about to hit the 1 million mile mark on his 1982 Honda. So they took that story and made it into like a really big production, inviting the local community to do a big parade. Like, they got in touch with me via geo-targeted messages to come out and celebrate this guy, Joe, who hit the $1 million mark, and they ended up giving him a free Honda at the end of it. And I thought what was so cool about it, I think, is that, I mean, it wasn't even me that we were celebrating here, but I felt like a part of this big celebration, and I felt really connected to Honda because they're such a big company and they did such a local event.
Hard to see the ROI immediately on throwing a parade for somebody, but but over time, how many people have told that story? How many people has that impacted? And for a company like Honda, you know, if that leads to a couple of Hondas being purchased, then they can quickly see some ROI. Thanks for sharing.
Hi, I'm Mallory. I'm an angry New Yorker, and whenever I go anywhere, I want things to be fast and a good experience. And I went to Lord & Taylor on my lunch break to get a watch sized. And I went to the Michael Kors counter with a Michael Kors watch, brand new, to size it. And they said, oh, we're sorry. We can't help you. You didn't buy that here. And I said, there's a tag on it. And she said, I can't help you. So I like social media, so I tweeted. And not Lord & Taylor corporate, but the store manager at the Lord & Taylor on Fifth Ave tweeted back at me and said, I'm the store manager. Please come back. Let me fix this for you immediately. And I couldn't go back then. She goes, when can you get back? I'm here till 5, but we'll stay as late as 7 to meet you. And she met me. She sat me down in a really comfortable chair. She fixed my watch. And she apologized profusely, saying that the customer service I experienced on Twitter is the customer service of Lord & Taylor corporate. And I had the best experience. And where I left originally, never wanting to go into a Lord & Taylor again, I'm now talking about how awesome Lord & Taylor is.
Cool. Thanks, Mel.
My name is Nicole. I'm also from New York, so I definitely know what it's like to be at the office all day. Kind of more than 9 to 5 doesn't exist in Manhattan. In my office, we, you know, around 2 o'clock get a little drowsy and kind of need to pick me up. One of my coworkers was looking around Twitter and saw that pretzel crisps, the little snacks, where they were tweeting about, you know, how they were in New York that day, and we were like, someone tweeted at them and said, you know, I'm really hungry. I could really use a snack. Pretzel crisps sound great. I might go get some. They tweeted back at her within the next 10 minutes and said, where are you guys? We'll stop by. They came by with a truck full of pretzel crisps for the entire office. Everyone was so excited to have them. And such a little thing just gave such a positive experience to me, kind of like a surprise and delight for that afternoon. But it really picked us all up, and I love talking about it still.
And how many people are now eating pretzel crisps every week?
Everyone. We buy it all the time.
Thanks, Nicole. How about a round of applause for all of our storytellers?
All right. So, what was the gag, right? We started off talking about how to be strategically unlikable, and the reason why this was such an interesting idea for both of us, I think, is because so many companies spend so much time focusing on a strategy that makes them unlikable without realizing it. And so I think one of the things that we wanted to highlight is, first of all of the stories that come out from people who do have a relationship with brands or with organizations that are likable. But how many people are currently employed right now? You have a job somewhere. Okay.
I said that's likable.
Yeah, that's likable. How many people got that job by finding an ad posting online, not knowing anyone, and just submitting a response? Okay. Probably, what, like 5% of the hands? Everybody else, how did you get your job, right? You had someone who knew you, someone who referred you, someone who chose to do something that they probably didn't have to do, but they chose to do for you. Why do people choose to do that? Why does someone choose to do something for you when they have a choice not to? What's the central fundamental reason that they do that? Sure, maybe there's an incentive behind it, right? I mean, how many people have some sort of job referral bonus within your company where, like, you get a certain chunk of money if you refer someone who eventually gets hired, right? A lot of companies do that. But if that were the only reason, I'm sure there's more than one person who wants to work at your company, right? And with this economy, why do you choose to help this person instead of that person, right? It's not always because of skill. That's what one of the things that we've both found research to show. So what I thought I'd do, at least from my point of view, is just share two stories of why this actually matters more than just being nice to people and doing favors for people. Because I think being nice to people, I mean, we all could generally kind of understand that there's some sort of karmic kickback that happens when you're nice to people, right? But what's the hard business side of that? I sort of started the conversation by saying, does this really actually make an impact for business? So, first story, from my point of view, is of a guy named Chitta Malik. And Chitta Malik is a guy who went to law school and finished law school and started working at a big law firm and decided that he didn't want to be a lawyer. Good for him, right? He decided that he wanted to be a sports agent. And anybody work as a talent agent or a sports agent right now? Okay, so it's a really tough business to get into. A lot of people want to do it. And the toughest type of agent, or one of the toughest types of agents to be, is an NFL agent because of the popularity of the NFL. But that's what he wanted to do. So eventually he met a guy who was a former player, and this guy had a talent agency, and they connected and had lunch, and he asked them some questions. They had a connection, so they started working together. Right? Super small agency. Guy who was working and running the agency, his name was Tony Page. If you're a huge football fan, you might remember him. He's sort of he played fullback like 10 years ago. But he had a sports agency. So these guys have been representing players, mostly no-name players. And finally, they get one player, probably about 3 years ago. And this player is an offensive lineman. And if you follow football at all, you know, those are the huge 350-pound guys. They're never the superheroes. Nobody ever knows their name. They just kind of do their job, and they retire after a couple of years because they don't last that long, right? So this guy's name is Cecil Newton, and they represent him, and they get him a practice squad slot, and then he eventually goes on to play. It's not a superhero story. He doesn't turn into the world-changing football player. But 3 years later, his younger brother goes into the NFL draft. Now, his younger brother is a quarterback. His younger brother wins the Heisman Trophy, which is the highest honor that college football gives. His younger brother's name is Cam Newton, which if you're a football fan, you probably know who Cam Newton is. He had a great first season this past NFL season. But Cam Newton has 15 sports agencies all trying to represent him. Right? Everybody wants Cam Newton as a talent agent because he's going to go in the first top 10 picks, if not number one. I mean, he has a real shot at going number one. So these guys, Chitha Malik and Tony Page, they get a meeting. And the only reason they get a meeting is because they work so hard with his older brother that the dad promises them a meeting. And he says, look, I'll get him to sit down with you. That's all I can promise. Can't do any more, right? Because the other guys might be able to do a better deal, they have more experience, whatever the reason is. So they get the meeting. They go into the meeting, and the biggest thing that they do is they focus on Cam Newton, the man, and not Cam Newton, the player. They talk to him about the impact that he can have as a football player on the world and not how much money he can make by getting a huge deal. They're going to get the money anyway. He's a great player. He's going to get a great contract. But what impact can he have beyond that? And beyond those 15 other sports agencies, they land him as a client. Small agency gets the biggest player who might be the number one pick, who eventually, a couple months later, does go number one and gets a 20-something million dollar contract. Gets signed by, who was it, the Panthers or the Jaguars or one of those teams? You guys probably know better than I do. But he gets a huge, huge contract, right? How did they get this guy? Part of the way that they got him was through exactly how all of you who didn't raise your hand saying, I just submitted to get the online job and I got it. They got it, right? They got it because they had a personal connection to him. They had a personal referral, and therefore they were able to land probably the biggest sports contract in their industry, at least, right? Having an NFL player who goes number one, that's the dream for any sports agent. So they land him, right? Second story, guy named Scott DiGiammarino, Italian guy, worked as a financial advisor for a while. He takes over now 17 years ago, he takes over the North Atlantic region of the American Express Financial Network. All financial advisors, they have probably 100 financial advisors in that network. There's 176 regions of financial networks around the country. This office that he takes over is rated 173rd out of 176 the year that he takes over. So he's got a huge problem, right? He comes in, he looks at all of his staff, he fires half the people right away. Says, you guys aren't doing your job for some reason, you're not providing good service to clients, I'm just getting rid of you. Keeps the other half, starts to grow the business again. After 1 year, they go from 173rd to number one. Pretty stunning turnaround. But doing that isn't enough, because getting to number one isn't as hard as staying at number one. For 13 out of the next 15 years, they stay number one, never losing that spot, only being number two 2 years out of those 15 years. So now American Express looks at this drawn-out success story of this financial advisor network, and they say, what's he doing? Why are they so much more successful? Is it just a more affluent area? Is he a better talent manager? Is he hiring better people? What is it about what he's doing? So they send in a team of McKinsey consultants to figure it out. They basically live there for 3 months, right? They look at everything that they're doing. They look at all of the hiring processes. They look at whether they have better clients. They look at whether they're just naturally in a better region. All of the explanations that you could possibly think of for why they have such a great success. They come up empty. Right? He's not really doing anything, it seems, that different from anyone else. The only thing they can point to is that he's got this practice where every morning he records a personal message by video because he manages multiple regions, so he can't be everywhere at once. So he chooses a movie clip, like a Braveheart movie clip or a Jerry Maguire kind of thing because of the talent agent thing, and something that has some sort of emotional resonance. He sends that to all of his staff, and then he has a personal message saying, what are you going to do to make this day amazing, to make it different? Along with that, he goes off and he talks to all of his staff. He spends time with each one of them. He helps them grow personally so that they'll do more professionally. So McKinsey looks at that, and they produce this long report, and the only thing that they can come up with is that his office does better because he motivates his staff to want to do better. And because he's able to inspire them to do better, they bring back more money, they stay longer, they retain with the company for more than 5 years, which is unheard of in the financial advisor network. It's really hard to get people beyond the 5 years, but if you do in that industry at least, then it's a huge success because they keep their clients for longer and they tend to spend more money and all of the stuff that you would expect, right? But that's what they find from this report. So American Express looks at that and say, okay, we need to take this guy and we need to basically roll him out. And they start putting him on road shows, and he goes across the country and he starts teaching other managers how to do that. And he starts teaching other regions how to do that. He has an internal TV show to do that. And all of it is based on this idea that his office does better because people are inspired by him. And they do better because he's running the office. And if you think about your own work experience, you think about your own work environment, how much of that is based on your personal motivation and dedication to do better for the person that you work for, the guy or the girl or whoever it is that you work with, right? And why do you do that? That's really what I tried to focus on. That's what you, I know a lot of your work focuses on. A lot of it has to do with the individual, the personal connection.
Yeah. Being personal matters.
Yeah.
And being likable matters.
So that's really the underlying message of what we wanted to deliver today, first by giving the gag of the kind of opposite, the flip side, the stuff that we all do or we all see in companies that doesn't really work, but also giving you sort of the reason why it should work. And then the last thing we were, I think, going to do is take some of your questions about how do we actually do that, because you all have different work atmospheres where maybe you're not the boss, or maybe you can't decide to just change things and do the personal video message to everybody and all of a sudden make a big change.
Yeah,
right?
I get a lot of questions, Rohit, about scalability of likability, right? How can you scale being personal and being likable across a larger organization? But I think that your example shows that it's possible. I mean, ultimately, it's about the individual and it's about ways to be personal, no matter how many people you're dealing with.
Yeah. So what we really wanted to do is just see who has any actual questions about trying to do this for yourself. Or if you still feel like the first version of what I said about the power of being unlikable actually maybe does work in your company. You know, let's talk about that too. So anybody has any questions, we will actually use the microphone, I think, because of the podcast stuff. So is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. So there's one right here. I saw your hand go up, so maybe you could make your way. And you can start here. We'll just start a line right here. So, yeah. And by the way, it's not unlikable if you do have to rush to the next panel or something like that. We're not personally offended. Everybody's trying to optimize their time. So, you know, I think you got the main message here. So if you do need to rush off, you'll miss some amazing stuff. You will. Because Dave is amazing.
It's going to get amazing. We are actually giving away free...
Yeah.
Giant thumbs to everyone in the audience.
See, there'll be total free stuff. Yeah, there's a thumb back there in case you want to see what it looks like. We're gonna solve world hunger, poverty, anything else that you could possibly think of. So
in 12
you really
minutes.
Don't want to miss that.
In 12 minutes.
That's right. But just in case you want to miss all of that, you can go. All right.
Mine's less a question and more to the unlikable part.
Yeah.
To me, it's know your audience. I worked on Jack Link's beef jerky for a number of years, and that audience loves the sass and the dickness of Sasquatch's character.
Yeah.
So for them, it absolutely worked. Absolutely increased sales and increased that relationship that the company has with their consumers.
In that case, the dickness is being likable.
Yep.
Right.
And I will say that's the most I've ever cursed in any presentation I've done over the last 5 years. So know your audience, right? Hopefully you guys weren't like put off by that.
We've been having this debate for the last couple months in our organization. We have a large retail client, and they struggle with customer service issues. Just by the way their business model is set up, they always struggle with this. So somebody said to me, well, we should take a bucket of money and we should do these things online, whether it be in social media or whatever, to illustrate that we care about customers and do customer service. The debate on the other hand of that is, well, the business can never actually realize that, so you're giving people, you know, a false sense of reality. So I just interested in your guys' thoughts on that.
Well, I guess I would push back. Why can't the business realize that?
Well, big question, but it's without getting into who it is and how this, it would be their business model of self-serve fights against that. I don't have any impact on that in the organization. Yeah, a reality. Okay. It's not going to change.
Well, let me say one thing. I love, when I think about some of the new technology businesses, right, like Facebook, right? Is Facebook a likable company in as much as can you ever get a response from Facebook as a user or even as an advertiser if you're a small business? No.
As an advertiser, you can.
So, if you're a small business, no. If you're spending enough, you can.
No, we spend like $1,000 a month, and they'll call and do it.
So they're getting better at that.
It changed, and I'm just, to your point, it actually made a big difference.
They're getting better at that. Yeah. But another thing that they do, and one solve that I see large organizations do is the Wikipedia, the wiki style FAQ, and the users helping users. Like, think about Apple and how, again, Apple's not necessarily answering all your questions right away, but they've developed this amazing culture of people that are going to help you on message boards, on at the Apple Store even, et cetera. And so maybe that client can somehow figure out a way to develop brand ambassadors, fans, customers, a wiki-style support so that it can still be self-serve, but they can somehow create that likable experience.
The only thing I'd say is, if your cousin's ugly, don't set him up with your best friend. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. Basically, send them somewhere where you actually do have some control over the experience, where you're not just saying, hey, you should go and talk to our product guys, when you know the product guys are morons and they're not going to answer the question. You're sort of setting yourself up for failure, right? So, I mean, one easy thing that anybody who works in web design, you probably do this all the time, is you've got a client, you have to build a new campaign, their website sucks and hasn't been updated in 2 years, what do? You don't try and slap something onto the website, you build a landing page, right? You build a separate site somewhere so that you can get around that whole experience and you send people somewhere else. That's basically the same thing, right? You're saying this website is substandard, therefore we got to find some other way, otherwise we're not delivering on our experience, and that's the only workaround. It sucks, but that's what you got to do with a big company.
And ultimately, companies that continue to really say screw you are going to perish. They are.
Hi, I'm Jen. I have a question. Our business caters to the B2C, but also B2B. And one of the main reasons I've been circulating in different sessions is to try and find better examples of how companies are leveraging social media to be more effective at B2B. Have you seen any really standout examples in addition to the Amex?
Yeah, I think IBM, which is, full disclosure, one of our clients, but I think they do a great job of actually owning a mental space. And the mental space is that we're working towards a smarter planet. And I think the power of that is not just that they create useful content, which is great for B2B because everybody's trying to do a job. So it's not just, I'm hungry, I'm in the checkout line, I want a Snickers bar, right? It's not that. It's, I have a job to do, I need somebody to give me free advice on how to do it. That's really powerful. That's why white papers always work, right? They work for years and years. But I think what IBM does is they have this unifying thing that not only brings their content together, but also gets every employee at IBM to say, that's what I'm working on. So no matter how complicated the crap is that they do on a day-to-day basis, they can look at that ad and explain to their family that I'm working towards that. And that's been a really powerful thing.
Yeah, I always say B2B is still B2P, right? At the end of every B2B decision...
That's not a toilet joke, is it?
No. B2P, yeah. At the end of any business-to-business decision is still real people. And those are real people that the B can relate to and be likable with.
Okay. Thanks.
Yeah, we have like 5 minutes or so. I think what we'll do, just for everyone's benefit, is we'll probably end a few minutes early so that you have time to come up and ask us questions that you might not want to ask in the group. And that way everybody else can go. And you poor guys who are sitting on the floor can grab a seat or stand up and stretch your back or whatever. So, yeah, okay. So
I work in software, and we have customers that request all kinds of features. And I feel like we have a really strong connection with those customers. But what I found is telling them no actually strengthens that relationship. And I kind of saw some similarities to the beginning of your presentation. And I just want to know what your experience is with denying customers what they think they want, but you have a strong feeling that you know they don't really need that.
So how many people, just as an example of exactly what you're... You can sit down, unless you have another follow-up. How many people have gone to a food truck here in Austin at some point during your trip? Okay. So you look at the menu, and you decide on one thing you want. How many people would prefer to have a sign up saying that they were sold out before you even stood in line versus getting up to the front and saying, I'd like that thing, and they say, oh, sorry, there's no chicken in Austin or whatever, you know, the thing is, right? We all would. So we all want to know, like, just tell us. You know, yeah, it sucks that you're out of chicken and I wanted chicken, but at least you saved me some time. You know, at least you saved me the fact of going through that. And I think that is at the heart of what you're describing, which is, you know, if you can't do it, just tell me, right? And people will get that.
Honesty goes such a long way. It's, you know, it's like, it's the lack of transparency that's so damn frustrating to customers.
But doesn't that increase their sales? Because then you're at the front of the line, you're more likely to choose something than keep walking.
No. Because then I'm mad that I didn't get the chicken. That's what I have in mind. So it's like, now I'll just walk away.
That is a great debate, though, right there. Right there. That's exactly what we're talking about, right?
That happened in New York, and I will not go to that truck again.
Ever again.
So did everybody hear that?
And,
did everybody hear that in the back? So what they said was, one guy said, you know, but if I know that they're out of the thing that I want, won't I just leave and walk somewhere else? And then they lost a sale. Versus me standing in line, I already invested the time. Therefore, I'm just going to pick something else, right? So, yeah, I don't have the perfect answer, but I think that's exactly what we're talking about, right? Some people would say, yeah, if they just told me, I would pick something else and I'd stay in line. And some people would be like, no, screw you, you don't have chicken. I want to go somewhere else.
But it's not the beauty is, to me, it's not just that he's going to leave and go somewhere else. It's that he's going to leave and go somewhere else and tell everyone he knows, which now in social media is a lot of people, about the shitty experience that he just had.
I unfollowed their tweets on you know, and that's it. I'm done with them.
Yeah.
You know, it's like,
so it's beyond one sale, right? You might not have bought something that one time.
So rude about it. You know, it's just like, you guys, you're a food truck. You know, I mean, you should be nice to everybody. That's what I'm doing.
That's actually in the food truck constitution. That's in the Austin State Capitol.
I think you really hit
behind plated glass.
Yeah, you really hit on something with the food truck thing there.
That's exclusively where I've eaten. So yeah.
I work for a major brand that makes cards, and obviously with our brand, we try to be very nice to people. But I think consumers have figured out that if they start a Facebook response with "Shame on you" brand name, that they can be as mean as they want.
Like no offense.
Yeah, exactly. Like no offense. So any recommendations for people who are very clearly Facebook bombing your page to get a, you know, to get a point across, and there's kind of no being nice to them, but how to at least maybe come up, craft a response that deals with the people who aren't kind of following that agenda?
Yeah. Has anybody had that experience? Somebody just comes in and they try, like, totally being negative. So the best strategy, I think, is to have enough of a community so that people answer on your behalf, right? That'd be ideal. If that doesn't happen, then sometimes you just got to either go at somebody full force, sort of, you know, take your point of view, and don't follow the customer as king, right? Because the customer as king is, that person's wrong, I don't agree with them, but, you know, we have to take their money, you know, we have to give them their money back even though they broke the thing, right? But that doesn't really work, I don't think, in social media, because there's people who are unreasonable, there's people who demand crap, there's people who just like attention. Right? Everybody wants to be micro-famous. So
I think you can always start with the customer's king. And if it's not going to work, if they keep posting, etc., you know, you can have a terms and conditions on the page, and you can ban people. And certainly, you know, there's a point at which the customer experience is more than just that customer. It's the rest of your customers and fans that you have to take into consideration. And you have to ban one person in order to preserve the likable experience for everyone else.
Yep. Okay, so we're going to close it there. I will tell you one last unlikable piece of advice. Do not under any circumstances, ever, ever get that, right?
But if you want to, because Rohit is such a rock star, you can get the first ever sneak peek at his new book, Lykonomics, at lykonomics.com/sneak peek, available exclusively to South By, folks.
And for Dave, his book, Likeable Media, Likeable Social Media, has been a New York Times bestseller. It's been an amazing thing, and your new book's coming out in a couple months as well, so either one is totally available. So we'll be here. Thank you for coming. Thank you for spending your morning with us.
Thanks, guys.